You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard on the World Wide Web. And Paul, Ellen is not here. Someone just sent me a text and they wanted to know how they can listen online. So if you'd be so kind to just tell them how to listen to our on-demand app on WWBC, please.
Absolutely. That would be 1510. That's 1510WWBC.com is where you can go streaming anywhere, or else you can download the app as well. That's the search for WWBC. So those are the two ways to hear us live Mondays at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I didn't see it on time, otherwise I would have responded, so thank you. So every week, every Monday, we have this weekly show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. My good friend Ellen Little and I, we sit down and talk to people here in our community, as well as people from all over the world, about current events, what's happening in our community, what's happening in the nation, and we touch a little bit and discuss things in a very unscripted, informative, and quite educational manner as well. And so in studio today, we have my good friend Sue Fallon is here. Welcome back to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you're going to be on the second segment, and we're going to be talking a little bit about saving Green Gables and historic Green Gables.
Thank you for having us here today.
And Jean is here. And Jean, you, we're going to be talking a little bit later with you as well about Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
Just welcome to our show.
Thanks.
And so I want you all to feel free to jump into the conversation today. My friend Dr. Sanjay Udoshi is online, is on the phone, and he is going to be chatting with us today. We're going to be talking a little bit about COVID-19. We're going to talk about how it affected our healthcare system, the economy, and Sanjay, are you online right now? Are you on the phone right now? I think Paul just gave out the the question that you asked about how to listen online. Yeah, he just said it. I think he can tell you again, Paul, if you want to tell him again, because I think he wants to tell people on his feed how to tune in.
Sure, of course. That's 1510WWBC.com, and click on the link that says Listen Now, and you'll pick us up that way.
Okay, Sand. So, you know, just before we start chatting with Dr. Sanjay Udoshi, Jean, you and Sue and I were just having such a robust conversation about COVID-19 and leadership and what our country needs right now. And I think that ties right into what Dr. Sanjay is going to be talking about. And I said, if you'd be so kind to share that with Sanjay at the beginning of our show, that would be awesome. We were talking about how we can get social issues involved on a day-to-day basis and speak about it on a platform
whenever
we can.
Sure. One of the things that's really become taboo in our nation is talking about politics, like places like workplace or religion out and about. And I think we need to be talking about politics every day, everywhere, because for crying out loud, politics is what rules all of our food, clothing, and shelter. However, we've been taught, I would say, we've learned to separate the two, and we can't do that.
Yeah, life is politics.
It is. We have to.
And with that, we're going to open our show. So okay. Sanjay, thank you so much for calling in. And I think you're calling in from Philly, right?
I'm calling just north of Philadelphia in northeastern Pennsylvania. So, yes, I'm in Pennsylvania. That's my hometown, home city.
Yeah. So every time I think about Philadelphia, I think about a Philly cheesesteak. But, of course, I don't eat beef, so I have to put chicken.
Yes.
So thank you for taking the time for calling in. And I know you, like so many of us, we get so frustrated when we're watching the news or we're watching social media and reading what people are posting. And some of them are posting the most ignorant comments about COVID-19, wearing your mask, social distancing, washing your hands. And I know as a physician that bothers you, and me too. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we want to chat with you a little bit about how we can move forward with healthcare, COVID-19, and what's happening.
Yes, thanks, Sita. Thank you again for having me. My background is in population health, as well as clinical genomics and clinical decision support. So as a physician, my background has been in assisting large healthcare systems implement evidence-based medicine. And part of that is the evaluation of evidence-based medicine and its impact in the lives of people with chronic disease, as well as the monitoring of their behavior for positive effects of application of recommendations. So, you know, this is where I come from. In a epidemic or a pandemic as we are now, the evidence is evolving, right? So we've seen all kinds of information come forward to the public. And unfortunately, as you would see with other, you know, chronic diseases, there's people who take the advice of their physicians and they tend to do better than those who don't take it.
Yeah.
So if you have a chronic disease like diabetes or kidney disease, chronic kidney disease or COPD or any of the other diseases that aren't necessarily life-threatening on a day-to-day basis, but you carry with you for a long period of time, the recommendations of your physician to get regular checkups and to get a particular blood work and make sure that you're taking care of yourself, those who adopt those and take them seriously obviously always do better.
So what's stopping people from using common sense and science right now? I don't understand. It's to me, you know, people have a common cold. They say, oh, I'm going to go see the doctor and get a Z-Pak. Well, the Z-Pak didn't fall from the sky. A scientist, physicians like yourself came up, you know, with what Z-Pak does and how it helps the human body. So right now, they're not listening to the scientists about COVID-19.
You're absolutely correct in that assessment. So the problem is that we are facing a lot of public confusion. And I think that public confusion is driven largely by misinformation and the spreading of bad recommendations. There's necessarily not exactly a specific person or anything that can be blamed. But we know that we are living in a very politicized, highly charged environment in this society this year. And we face a headwind of this tribalism that a certain side believes in the leadership of one versus the other. And mask usage has become politicized. And we know that those who are wearing masks and abiding by the public health recommendation to distance themselves in public and not congregate are the ones that are at least risk from transmission and infectivity. So those who have adopted the stance that this is just a some sort of hoax or it is a political ploy by the opposite side to exert some sort of control over them, they are actually not just enhancing the risk for themselves, they're enhancing the risk for everyone around them, not just in their community, but also nationwide.
Right, and all they had to do was listen, but of course, I know my husband has a little app on his phone, and he can check that all the time and tell me how many deaths, due to this COVID-19 pandemic. And I think right now we're at 192,000 deaths, and we have an estimated 475,000 long haulers. Explain to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, what are long haulers?
Long haulers, unfortunately, is a term used to describe a patient whose symptoms are lasting beyond the initial acute infection. So the initial acute infection is typified by a high fever, cough, difficulty in breathing. Many describe it as the worst flu they've ever had. The fever tends to last between 4 and 8 days on average, but for some, it has lasted much longer. But that's the acute phase. Now, long haulers are those who recover from that initial symptom of cough and difficulty breathing and fever, but now have some sort of a debilitating problem that they're dealing with as a result of COVID. And that could be something as serious as a heart problem, which we call cardiomyopathy, and that's a result of the virus damaging the heart. It could be damage to the architecture of the lung that has caused the long-term breathing difficulties or long-term breathlessness. What I'm saying by long-term is about 3 months, 4 months, and in fact, a recovery period where they haven't felt well, they haven't recovered to their baseline.
So it's health. Lingering. So it's just the disease is just lingering in their system.
Correct. And the issue with long haulers is that they need continued health care. So they are continuing to go back to their doctors and complain of these symptoms, and the doctors are continuing to investigate using, you know, CT scans for their lungs and chest. And blood work, and following up by prescribing other medications that are trying to alleviate the symptoms. So you can imagine with nearly 500,000 people seeking healthcare beyond the initial infection, this is also a burden on our healthcare system as well as a significant expense to the economy.
Right. And we all watch on TV, people are talking about all these cures. If you take a combination of the Z-Pack plus, other pills, if you take vitamin C, if you take D, if you take zinc. As far as we know, there's no actual cure for COVID-19, correct?
That's correct. There is nothing that is available currently that is curative, either during the acute phase or after the acute phase, to clear the virus from your body. Those that have gotten advice around hydroxychloroquine or zinc, certain supplements, who believe that these are curative, unfortunately, that's absolutely incorrect. And, this is the kind of pervasive bad information that we keep seeing spread through social media. And this is, dangerous. It is dangerous for many reasons. And the most obvious is the feeling that if they are taking these supplements, they don't need to use a mask. They don't need to distance physically. They can congregate in large groups. That's one aspect. They feel like they have some protection that isn't there. Or they just feel like if they do get sick, these are available as a cure. And they're not.
Right. But so Sanjay, so tell us, what is the impact of COVID-19 on our economy, the healthcare system in general, and actually to society? I mean, this is the cost that all of us, the taxpayers, have to absorb for those with irresponsible behavior. Like you say, if they'll go out and say, well, if I get it, I'll just go and ask for a Z-Pack and dexamethasone and some zinc, and I'll be all right for 2 weeks. But there has to be some detrimental cost to all of us with this.
Okay, so that's an excellent question. And I will start by saying I'm not an economist and I don't have a background in economics. But I do have a deep background in healthcare policy, policy impact around, the cost of healthcare and things like that. So speaking from that perspective, I can say that the length of this pandemic and its effect on the United States is significantly greater than in other countries. If you look at the curves, as we call them, of the increases in daily cases and then subsequent decreases, only the United States has seen this kind of case number on a daily basis for months. Other countries that were hit hard initially, like the United Kingdom, Italy, Spain, they have recovered from the high case loads, and they have flattened their curve and now are in a phase where the daily case counts are much more manageable. Well, that does two things. That allows their healthcare system to reset and is not running at a maximal capacity for weeks and months at a time. We have to remember that the healthcare delivery is not mechanistic. It's not a bunch of machines running at high capacity 24 hours a day. These are human beings that are delivering care. And to ask your, community of ER doctors and ICU doctors and nurses and, the entire healthcare team in your community to run at capacity for weeks and months is not optimal, and it can lead to failure. And that failure means higher medical errors, greater unforeseen death rate associated with and not associated with COVID. And I mean, the statistics, they tend to be very clear. So that's one aspect where you cannot overburden your healthcare system for this duration and expect the same level of performance out of it. Then, obviously, the inability for the economy and to recover to baseline means that less people are eating out, less people are shopping, less people are going on vacations, and obviously that's huge impact. So the length of the pandemic, as well as the daily high transmission rates, the percent positivity above a certain percentage as deemed dangerous or high risk for large parts of the country, and that includes about 22 states right now, means that the economy is suffering. And when you compare our economy's GDP on a quarterly basis to other industrialized nations, we have taken the largest hit of around 10.6%, whereas other nations have taken half of that or less. And so the numbers tend to be very, very stark in comparison to the performance of other countries in dealing with the pandemic.
And so for our listeners or friends who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, today we're speaking with Dr. Sanjay Udashi. I hope I'm saying you're writing your name correctly.
Correct, Sita.
Good. Udashi. I like it. Sounds like a movie star. So, of course, I've taken the flu vaccine every year for the last, I don't know, because I'm a nurse and we're required to take it at work. But, of course, a few people at where I work and my friends and all of us were saying, well, wait a minute. It seems like they're rushing this vaccine through for COVID-19. And people are really scared about the safety and the effectiveness of a vaccine that's rushed through. So what can you tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to calm their nerves? Because a lot of people won't take it or they're already dead set against it because they don't trust what's happening right now with it being rushed before the elections.
Sure. I think what I'll do with this question, as you were stating it, I think I'll offer a two-part answer. One is a compliment and one is a caution. The compliment I want to offer is to the biomedical research community that's been able to characterize the virus, sequence its genome, develop clear pathways for understanding its infectivity, its life cycle, and potential areas where it can be addressed with medication that we currently have, as well as where we must look to develop medication that can be effective against it, all within a six-month period. Now, I want to draw a contrast to what the same biomedical community did when it was faced with HIV. The same steps that I just described, characterizing the virus, sequencing its genome, looking at places where therapeutics can be applied, that took decades. And we've been able to do it in 6 months in this era because of all the tools that were developed during the fight against HIV. So a round of applause and perhaps even a standing ovation is appropriate for how hard the biomedical community has worked to address this globally, especially within the United States, because we are, you know, we have the engineering and biomedical muscle to do this and to be the leader in the world in addressing it. So I'd like that compliment to go out to the public and let them understand how hard these people are working to get us out of the pandemic. The caution I have to offer is that the processes that I just described are assisted largely by automation, compute power, and manpower. But those same tools can't be used to develop a vaccine because the requisite steps are not automation-based. They are based on testing in human beings. Mm-hmm. So the processes of going through clinical trials, phase 1, 2, 3, challenge trials, phase 4, safety and effectiveness observations, they can't be rushed. The molecular biology, the manufacturing, the deployment, all of that is ready to go because of, like I mentioned, 2 decades worth of experience and tooling. So we have that at the ready. The bottleneck is observation in live patients. So, you know, you can't shorten a 3-week observation, I'm sorry, a 3-month observation period down to 3 weeks and expect the same results.
Yeah, so that's why people are scared. But Sanj, we only have like, I think, 4 or 5 minutes left and for this segment. But I wanted to ask you really quick, one of the questions that people ask all the time, and I received this on my email this morning too, was people are saying that less people are dying from COVID-19. Does that mean that the virus has weakened?
Great question. And from the studies of the virus and its mutation and the generation of different strains, again, the generation of strains is duration and population dependent. The larger the number of people who are infected, the more strains develop. And so the longer this goes on and the more people that get infected, the higher the danger of the of a strain emerging that is either more deadly or more infective and things like that. So that's why you want to bring pandemics to a close, to an end as fast as possible while infecting as few people as possible.
Right. And the other thing is really quick, I see Paul's giving me 4 more minutes. Oh, we got 4 minutes. That's wonderful. So what does the second wave look like? And should people actually be worried about the fall and the winter? I mean, you're a scientist. You also use good common sense. And I love how you explain things to us. You already have 2 fans, Sue and Jean, are both listening intently. And we love what you're saying. I mean, I wish I had more time. But so tell us, what do you think about the second wave? And should people be careful and be scared for what's happening?
Sure. So there's no for fear. I've said this on my last appearance on your show. There's no cause for to be fearful. There's always a cause to be careful. So and to finish up the previous question, has the virus weakened? Because that's important in answering the question you just asked.
Yeah,
the virus has not weakened. The virus is pretty much the same when it comes to its danger to your health. One thing that has improved is how we treat it. As you mentioned, and your background as a nurse, you're aware that the mortality, which is defined as patients that have been admitted to a hospital and then have, you know, confirmed COVID and go through the course of the disease. In the initial 3 months here in the United States, the mortality rate was around 2.5 to 2.7%. That means about 2.5% of people admitted with COVID would die. That mortality rate is now down closer to 0.5. So 0.5. That means we've seen about a 70 to 80% improvement in mortality rate. That means, you know, we've really cut down the risk of death if you're admitted with COVID. And that's because we have these drugs and the research behind them in the last 6 months about their efficacy in the hospital setting. But again, I want to repeat, this is in the hospital setting. Without medical care, we don't really know what the true mortality rate is. But with medical care, we are very confident that we've done the needful to bring the mortality rate down in hospitals. Okay, now back to the fall. One of the things to worry about in the fall is the fact that a lot of us, especially in the Northeast, are going to be, doing our activities mostly indoors again. During the summertime, we spend a lot of time outdoors. We spend a lot of time being able to walk around and get on our bicycles and be active outdoors. That may contribute to the fact that we've seen a much lower transmission rate here in the Northeast and in the colder states, so to speak, during the summer. As our activities return to the indoors, that's where the transmission risk is the highest. Recirculated air, inability to get circulation and fresh air promotes the viral transmission because it is an aerosolized virus. So as we start to gather for Thanksgiving and we start to shop for Christmas and a lot of our activities return to the indoors, the risk for a second wave in the Northeast especially, and then subsequently later in the South, as the temperatures drop, is very significant. And so it's very important to remember that even though transmission and daily infection rates may start to seem, to the point of not being a threat anymore, they are.
Gotcha. Well, we have like 1 minute left. I'm going to give you 1 minute out of my second segment really quick. What do we need to do to end this pandemic? And will another lockdown be necessary for it? People want it to go away, but I know it's not going away anytime soon. So what do we need to do?
Yeah. Excellent question. So in my estimation, I'll answer the last question first, which is another lockdown necessary? My answer is no, it is not necessary. And it would only be necessary if we see transmission rates exceed percent positivity of 25%. On average throughout the country, and in which case then we're headed for a massive second wave. So another lockdown is absolutely not necessary in this short term, in the next few months, I would say. But if Americans do not take this seriously, if we continue to see irresponsible behavior, then there is a possibility of this spiraling back out of control. Let's be very clear about that. What does it take to bring the pandemic to an end? Well, it's pretty simple, and I'm actually extremely hopeful about the fact that these paper-based, strip-based tests are going to become available at every drugstore, soon, so you can test at home, can test your family and children regularly. In fact, that's recommended if they're going to go back to school, that they are tested regularly along with their teachers. If businesses are going to open again, then the employees that deal with a lot of customers should be tested regularly. So testing and the ubiquity of testing is one major tool that's coming out of this soon, as a significant way to reduce or eliminate transmission.
Well, Stan, thank you so much. Paul is giving me the heads up that it was a great segment. We really appreciate you taking the time to call in and give our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends your website or a way to contact you if someone would like to, listen to you more or maybe hear one of your podcasts that you do. Just give us the information.
Thank you. So fb.com, Sanjay Udoshi, all lowercase.
Thank you so much again, and I'll talk to you later on, and thanks for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you, Sita. Take care.
All right.
Symphony Orchestra's Music at the Watering Hole, a free online family concert. The program will feature a stimulating original story by national best-selling author Michelle Wallace Campanelli that will come to life on screen with a film presentation created and directed by award-winning Mendex Studios. King of Africa, Kojo the Lion, was surprised when a box fell off a tourist bus and dropped a symphony of musical instruments near his watering hole. With a great love for music, Kojo decides to bring all of the wild animals of the savannah together. Could these natural enemies learn to get along to become an orchestra? And just what would they play? The concert will feature music from Madagascar, Lion King, Zootopia, Jungle Book, Jurassic Park, The Croods, and more. So once again, that's Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th at 3 p.m. This is a SpaceCoastSymphony.org online event. Music at the Watering Hole, Sunday, November the 8th, 3 o'clock, SpaceCoastSymphony.org. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're on 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're also heard on the air all over the world online at WWBC. All you have to do is put in WWBC. You'll see a little app there, hit on demand, and you're good to go. Correct? Did I say it right?
You said it right.
Yeah. Ellen Little is not here with us today. But I do want to thank Dr. Sanjay Udashi for calling in. I think he has two good fans here in the studio. I've never heard someone explain science the way he explains it. Because he makes you fall in love with science. Yeah. You know, doesn't he?
Very clearly.
Because when I was a teenager in science class and they were trying to teach us stuff, I always wanted to do something different because I was bored. But the way he explains the genes and the science and what people are trying to do for COVID-19 and AIDS and the vaccines and all, it makes you want to listen and learn, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So our second segment now, we've got my good friends are here, Sue Fallon and Gene Albertson are here. And they've been here before on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And historic Green Gables is one of the causes that we all love to work on. We want to make sure that this home, Green Gables, stays here in the state of Florida, in Melbourne, Florida, on US 1. And so we've all been trying our best to fight the powers to be to help us to save this building. And so Gene is going to tell us a little bit about himself and how he got involved with saving Green Gables.
Well, thanks for having us, Sita. I got involved with Green Gables because I was looking for something fun to do. I had just gotten close, moved to town, and looking for something fun. And by golly, these folks were trying to save this old house and just starting a new team. And I thought I'd join in. It's been a blast. It's been
It's like life with purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Gives you something to do with like-minded people.
Well, I fell madly in love with the house. And I've yet to meet anybody who's been inside it and seen it that doesn't.
Yes.
And I just did. It was just,
it's like we're saving this. It's like a baby. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to protect it mm-hmm. and take care of it, right?
And save it.
And save it. And so, and I love the mission statement for Green Gables, to preserve and restore the historical landmark and surrounding green space known as Green Gables. And so we all want to save the green spaces. We want to be able to breathe. And so tell us how you got involved with Green Gables.
Well, I got involved because I was a member of the Melbourne Women's Club. And it turns out I went to help in an event, but it turns out that Mrs. Wells, the original owner of Green Gables, was one of the first Melbourne presidents of their women's club. So that's how I initially got involved. And I thought, what? This is just wonderful. I need to be a part of this. And when you come in, go into the house or on the grounds even, it just draws you in, and it's enchanting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a style. Isn't it like a Queen Anne's style,
yes.
the
mm-hmm.
home?
Yes, it is.
And for Melbourne, we don't see a lot of that anymore.
This is only three that are privately owned that can be saved for the future of that style architecture.
Right, and it was built by William and Nora Wells. And again, when Dr. Sanjay Udashi was talking about COVID-19 and the respiratory system, I thought about Nora Wells because her husband built that home because she had a respiratory problem.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they said that he wanted her to be able to breathe the air from the scenic route, you know, from the river, and the air that she breathed, he thought would help her with her illnesses.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She had problems with pneumonia, and they were from upstate New York. So Florida was the ideal place to be.
Right. And when you go into Green Gables for that time, Gene, the architecture of that building, it's genius.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all saw in the gallery, in the porch, the way he built it, where you can feel that breeze just coming through.
Absolutely. Well, the original construction, when they first built the house, had a smaller porch on it that just ran around the two sides of the house. At least two sides. And when by the time they got there and spent a little bit of time, they realized quickly that the beautiful river off the breeze off the river,
yeah,
coming around the corner of the house deserved a great big giant round porch. Well, it so happened the porch was built in the Queen Anne style. They modified the home to make it to Queen Anne style, and named it Green Gables after Anne of Green Gables,
yes,
the novel,
yeah,
apparently. Now the story, I don't know what for sure about its urban myth or its factuality, but the story I heard was that the naming of Green Gables may have been enticing the teenage daughter to move to Florida because she didn't want to leave all of her friends in her school, but she was a big fan
of
the popular literature,
yeah, yes.
at the time. So,
And I've read somewhere where it said that there was a path from the house all the way to Front Street.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I believe Mr. Wells built the path mm-hmm. that went all the way down. It was along the river, and it went all the way down to the trysting steps, which are no longer there. It was sort of like a lover's lane,
yes,
where you would walk with your boyfriend or girlfriend.
So that would go right into what you were saying about the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they thought she would just take a romantic walk all the way to Front Street.
Or maybe they could watch her down the path from the house.
Yeah, you just feel like we are missing something if we don't save this historic
yes.
home. You know, I just feel like we're not doing ourselves a service if we don't. So how are we going to save it? We're counting on matching grants from the state to finally purchase Green Gables.
Yes.
So how's that coming along, Sue? And where do we go from here?
Well, thanks to family and the community and people of some from other areas who donated and pledged, we were able to apply for the state of Florida Division of Historical Resources matching grant. We've asked for $482,500 because the house is $965,000. At the end of September, we're going to be ranked with 68 other grants, either for acquisition of properties or restoration of properties, and we're going to be ranked by the Florida Historical Commission. And if we're in the ranking, it will go before the state budget and the legislatures, and the and then finally the governor has to approve all the applications for the grants
to allocate the funds. Yes,
it has to be included into the state budget, so we won't see funds if we're approved until July of 2021, next year.
So are we going to have an actual inspection where a team of people come to look at the property, or online maybe?
No, we did like a structural report,
okay,
in the very beginning, and that was submitted along with the grant. And I believe that won't have to happen. But it's that's just the part where we become owners of the property.
Yeah, yeah. And Jean, you, as well as so many other volunteers who are donating your time, your energy, your effort, and even your money, you guys are turning Green Gables into a living history museum. How is that progress coming along?
Oh, it's coming along great. We've got the house staged, so when you walk in, it really looks like a turn of the 20th century home. With the furniture and furnishings in, we just got a donation of a player piano, a foot pump player piano,
yes,
for everybody to enjoy. As part of the museum operation, we do education programs. We have before COVID, we had a lot more in-house, and we're just starting to come back to in-house school group programs. So if anybody's interested in visiting Green Gables as a school group, give us a call. We have definitely CDC guideline programs set up.
Yes.
We're looking at doing more activities on the grounds. One of the things that we have to do to really turn the house into a museum is to get the house stabilized, restored, refurbished, replaced, the different parts of it.
Yeah, and it has to be safe.
Safe.
So many people are in and out.
Yes.
And if you have groups of children and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet that takes a lot of time, because you have to clean out, you have to do tree work, you have to make sure the ceilings are good, the roof mm-hmm. repairs. And what about a sign? Did we ever get a big sign up?
Yes, we have on September 24th, and the public's invited to attend. We received our historical marker from the Pomeroy Foundation, and it's going to be installed, and we're going to dedicate it at 5:30 on the 24th of September.
That outside?
Yes.
Yeah, I could probably come because
outside.
I'll come.
So, and we'll stand 6 feet apart
yeah.
if we need to,
mm-hmm.
and it will be dedicated that day, and it shows that we are in the National Register of Historic Places, and we've also been included in Florida's 11 to Save. That was the last time, was in 2018.
It's so beautiful to see a committee and a community of such hardworking, dedicated people coming together for such a good cause. Because I know how many people have said to me, when I tell them that I'm one of the people, one of the volunteers who are trying to help save this historic building, this home, they said, well, I didn't even know it was there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people drive by on US 1, and they didn't even know that this beautiful Queen Anne style home was sitting there just waiting for some love and appreciation from the community. Why do you think that they didn't know it was there? Is it just the bushes, or people just didn't look?
It sat there behind the bushes for a long time. And once now it's visible. I think the social media that push that we've been forced to go to mm-hmm, as opposed mm-hmm. during the COVID actually turned out to be a blessing, because it turned out to be an enhancement. So we've got the social media and the movie and everything
yeah.
In addition to coming back on. But it is the community. I want to point out our roof repairs have been done, and they're going to give us a new roof apparently, but it's the local county roofers association has done it, donated.
Yeah. People that care.
Yeah, our local Jenkins Tree Service came in and took out thousands of dollars worth of tree work for us for a very small amount of money.
And it's so beautiful because all it takes is for people to believe in something.
Mm-hmm. And want to be
and
part of it.
And we do. We all believe in saving historic Green Gables.
Sure.
But Gene, what I noticed when I come there is the unity. Mm-hmm. It's almost like in a time when our country is so divided, Green Gables has offered so many of us a place to congregate and talk and laugh, and people mm-hmm. from all different walks of life and class and culture, we're sitting there and we have this common goal. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's unified this community somehow?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's a place where you can come and just relax and forget about the day-to-day.
It takes you away.
Stress, mm-hmm. and it just takes you away to a different time and place, and you can just relax, and then mm-hmm. You look at the water and the birds and the animals and the butterflies.
And all the fellow Green Gables lovers that you get to hang out with.
That's what I'm saying.
Positive
and the shirts. Yeah. So we are counting on donations for all the operational expenses because there's still expenses. We have taxes. We have to pay for lights. We have to pay for cutting the grass.
Taxes are $15,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Alone,
and
plus all other expenses.
And so how can people donate? I know it's people on lockdown, you know, we have COVID-19, but there are still people in our community. I've always said if every person in Brevard County, Florida, just gave $5 or $10, we can save Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's all it takes is a cup of coffee, right?
Yeah.
So how can someone donate if they wanted to continue helping?
They could go to greengables.org, and we have a donate button right on there. In addition, they can watch the documentary that was prepared by Be Unique Productions, Jennifer East and Mary Brotherton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful movie. But they can donate right there. They can mail a check to our post office box, 1086 Melbourne, 32902.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know I had my friend Pete with the Renaissance Fair had asked me some questions about helping out, and I put him in contact with Marion.
Yes. Yeah.
In addition to that, we're going to have a harvest festival, the house on Foggy Bluff. You'll have to tell us about that. And so give us some of the details about some of the events that are scheduled, weather permitting, COVID-19 permitting, that we're going to be having to bring in a little more income to help us save Green Gables.
Yes, the Harvest Fest is October 3rd. It's a daytime event. It's for families. There'll be games for kids. We're keeping people, though, 6 feet apart, all the tables. There'll be crafters there, food trucks. And then we'll also have a giveaway of a wood-burning grill that most men know all about those. And then on the house on the Foggy Bluff is for Halloween and the weekend of October 23rd and 24th and the 30th and the 31st, we're going to have it'll be a haunted house, a walk-through. Everybody will be 6 feet apart. There's no touching. There's no blood, but it'll be scary, and that'll be about $10 a person.
Even the ghosts will have masks on.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be great because it's probably one of the only ones around Melbourne that'll be happening. Then, like you said, the Renaissance Fair, we're having like a preview at Green Gables on December 12th.
Wonderful.
It'll be fully set up. Food booths will also be there. And that's a preview for their Brevard Legends Renaissance Fair that comes to Wickham Park in January.
Mm-hmm.
But also in December, Museums of Brevard will be, there will be six museums across Brevard County. One being Green Gables, where you can buy a $35 ticket and at your convenience visit each one, seeing them decorated for the holidays, having like maybe cookies and some sort of beverage.
Yeah, and it gives you something to do.
That's right.
Right? Because you can go visit different days. You don't have to go at the same time.
Yes, and all of the museums have CDC compliance in place. We've all been meeting about this. And they're all following the CDC guidelines.
And what I love, too, is the word Christmas here. Because, you know, I just read an article. I don't know if you guys read a lot. Like, I mean, my husband and I read like 4 to 5 hours a day articles on everything under the sun. And I just read this article where it said 30% of the American people are depressed or lonely because of COVID-19. And people are depressed not because of their own situations in some cases, but because of the loss of someone in their family that lost something. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily someone who passed away, but they're just missing a freedom of that we had before. So by seeing the word Christmas holiday affair, people want to see those lights again.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you happy. And it's a time when it's festive, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be, I'm sure you're going to be doing something at Green Gables for the holidays.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. It will be totally decorated.
Yeah.
And we even have a small tree. We have more than one tree inside. And one has ornaments that are all the Zonta ornaments that have been designed over the years about Melbourne buildings.
And we're going to have lights on the upper part of the house this year, lights all over the house.
Yeah,
definitely.
So people could, I mean, even, if, and you know, the nice thing about there is we have adequate parking if families want to just drive by,
sure,
take a picture, look around, and go on again. It makes you happy.
That's right.
Well, and the house is open every Saturday, 10 to 2, with the exception of the Halloween events this October. But yeah, we're there every Saturday, 10 to 2. You can come in and look around.
And we talked a little bit about Green Gables allowing groups to come in for tours. Mm-hmm. But I know they have a vigorous education program. What else are they offering with the education program? Is it something like the Brevard Zoo? You know how they have, like, sometimes they have summer camps, a day camp, maybe a lunch?
Well, right now we don't have any camps set up, but we do have an education room. It's been named the Adam B. Cohen Education Center. We do have games that they play both inside and out. When the students come, they make goat's milk soap. Sometimes they make ice cream. And they get a lesson in Florida history. And they get a tour of the home. And they get the history and the legacy of the Wells family who built the home.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did for Melbourne.
Right. And Jean, you know, oftentimes people retire and they're looking for something to do. And instead of sitting at home and being bored and depressed, people can volunteer. There's so many places to volunteer in Brevard County, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
But like you and Susan and even myself, I feel like life is too wonderful not to volunteer, not to work, not to do something. I keep busy all the time, and so do you.
Sure.
And you're always looking for volunteers at Green Gables.
Oh, we definitely.
So how can someone apply or maybe come in person, or how do you become a volunteer?
Yeah, we definitely need all the help we can get. You can go to greengables.org and reach us there anytime. You can come and visit us. As I said, we're there 10 to 2 every Saturday. Come on in and take a look around. I think the biggest thing about volunteering at Green Gables to remember is everybody brings what they have to bring, and it's not necessarily all the same thing, and we don't ever want anybody to do anything too hard or not fun, and so if everybody just comes and does what they want to have fun doing, everything gets done.
They're
so
unique.
Please come join us. Unique.
Right. Everybody has something to
absolutely
offer.
Right.
No matter
absolutely
what it is,
and
right,
whatever it is, bring it. Let's talk about it. I'm sure we can use it if
right
it's something you want to offer.
And Sue, so when a person comes to Green Gables, mm-hmm, and they get a tour, they fall in love with the place.
That's right.
Then people start thinking, like my brain started thinking right away when I left. I started seeing this train in my head going from Green Gables to Melbourne. I started seeing mothers and children and father and families, people with their loved ones coming to sit down and have tea at Green Gables. I started to see a gift shop in my head. I started to see costumes. I mean, I had this head full of thoughts and ideas. And I know everybody else feels that way about Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have like a committee that sits down and plan and try to see what we can do?
Yes, we do. We do. We have a restoration committee right now that's working on restoration plans. Now, I don't want to promise anyone anything because full restoration takes years. But we're operating right now, and we will be able to do that pretty much until they start tearing the house apart.
Right.
But in the meantime, what we do is they can come and take the tour. It's and they can spend as much time on the grounds and in the house as they like. It, our vision in the future is to have a trolley that travels through the businesses downtown and to other museums around. And, you know, that's in the future, the far future, but it is part
of. And there's a drawing of that. There's a drawing. As an architect, of somebody put a new picture of what the new house would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gorgeous.
Yes.
So people should come by and see it because it really, it is restoration at its fullest.
Yes.
It
would. The house was built and transformed into the Queen Anne in a five-year period between 1896 and 1901. I mean, and that's, to me, think about that, without no power tools and all that they did.
Yes.
It'll be beautiful with the wraparound porch again on the top and the widow's walk at the top.
Yes.
It's going to be awesome.
And Gene, what other activities does Green Gables offer to the community?
Well, I mean, basically part of our mission is to have it be a community resource inside and out. And we're looking for all different kinds of activities. One of the things we're doing now is a Sunday in the park, a very low-key event. We'll come out there and listen to some music. Last week, 2 weeks ago, we did some painting and did some arts and crafts. Just a real good fun time. We've got, on the September the 13th, we've got a guest entertainer, Jessica Spears, going to come and sing for us. What I would do is encourage anybody who would like to do anything at Green Gables to contact us. I want to start a croquet club.
Right. Right, and September 19th, you have Clean Up the Grounds Day.
Yes.
And I know, Paul, we have, what, a minute left?
Come and help.
So for anyone who wants to come and volunteer for any of the tasks, assist at an event, lead a tour, greet visitors, mow the grass, weed, whack the grounds.
Eat cookies,
clean out debris, plant new garden, join Gene in that, clean the inside of the house, sweep. I love to sweep.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, even dress in a costume.
Yeah.
Green Gables needs time, energy, some money, and your ideas. And what's the website? One more time, Sue Fallon.
www.greengables.org. Please check it out.
Well, thank you. Thanks to you, Sue Fallon, and Gene Albertson for coming in to speak on behalf of Green Gables, Historic Riverview Green Gables, and my friends Dr. Sanjay Odashi, who called in earlier. And we'll be back here next Monday on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. It's been a wonderful show. Thank you, Paul, for running the board.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM. Yeah. Mm-hmm.